This is Herb Montgomery, Director of Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free, even our seminars that we do in various venues. So if you'd like to help us keep doing what we do, I'll tell you how you can do that at the end of this podcast. For now, it's our hope that you will just simply enjoy this podcast as our gift to you. This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our title this week is An End of the World Savior versus Present Liberator. Our feature text is Mark 1, 27 through 28, where it says, "The people were all so amazed that they asked each other, 'What is this? A new teaching and with authority.' He even gives orders to impure spirits." And when you hear that impure spirits, think cosmic forces of evil, and I'll explain that more in just a moment. And then Mark goes on, "And they obey him. News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee." And this week, we're looking at how some sectors of Christianity focus on the end of the world to the exclusion of redeeming the present. And historically, Christians have taken an interest in alleviating human suffering. They've been involved in human rights movements, from abolition of slavery and the temperance movement to disaster relief and more recently, Black Lives Matter. Yet some sectors of Christianity are much more concerned with saving people from some end time calamity in their future life than they are with people's present life. And even those sectors that do alleviate present suffering, typically they focus on individual change rather than structural or systemic change. The traditional Christian effort in regards to poverty is just one example of what I'm talking about this week. The effort usually takes the form of charity, such as giving people food for today, yet not addressing the systemic causes that create their hunger to begin with. And I'm not saying that charity is wrong. It's vital. It's simply not enough. And more recently, some Christians have begun even offering financial education and seminars on money management aimed to enable and empower the poor to succeed within the present economic system. But these seminars don't even look at the financial system itself and ask whether this system is, in fact, just. Both the service and education approaches, they inadvertently place the blame for poverty on the victims themselves. In other words, it's your fault that you're poor. And sometimes a person's individual choices, they do cause them to suffer. And sometimes there's a much bigger picture that limits the choices that a person can even make. Either way, it's victim blaming to focus on delivering folks from personal sin and leaving untouched the sinful social structures that cause their suffering and oppression as well. Sin moves both individually and socially, and so does grace. Grace also moves both individually and socially. But far too many Christian or sectors of Christianity, they don't even go this far. They focus solely on saving people from affliction at the end of time without regard to what afflicts those same people right now, today. And that's directly opposed to the approach of the Gospels Jesus. We never see Jesus walking around trying to get people to say a sinner's prayer so as to either go to heaven when they die or to be raptured from global catastrophe in the end of time. And even this, it's not to be confused with Jesus's call to nonviolence, where Jesus was endeavoring to offer Jerusalem a different fate than being destroyed by Rome. We do see Jesus liberating those he came in contact with from those concrete things that oppress them in the present time. And end time or end of the world focus, it tends too often to allow for laziness in matters of social justice now. And end of the world focus tends too often to preserve the present position of those benefiting at the expense of others from the current status quo. In other words, you're looking so far in the future, people who are benefiting from an unjust status quo right now are perfectly safe. That's not the focus. And an end of the world focus also tends too often to leave those that are presently poor, presently mourning, or presently hungry unblessed by the gospel of Jesus. And you can contrast that with Luke 6, 20 through 26. But to see Jesus as present liberator, not merely end of the world savior, let's look at Mark's stories of the demoniacs. And first, I'm going to share a few words about the apocalyptic worldview that the early gospel authors possessed. And the apocalyptic worldview, the writers of the early gospel stories subscribe to what is called an apocalyptic worldview, and that means that they saw the world as the battleground for the cosmic forces of good and evil. The apocalyptic worldview possesses four tenets: dualism, pessimism, judgment, and immanence. And I'm taking these four. I've adapted these, and I'm going to enlarge on these. But these four, if you want to pursue more than what I'm going to share this weekend, or this week in this week's podcast, if you want to look at it a little further, these four tenets are found also in Bart Ehrman's Underlying Tenets of Apocalypticism in his book, God's Problem. And if you've got the Kindle edition, that's pages 214 through 219. But these four tenets, again, it's dualism, pessimism, judgment, and immanence. And I'll explain each one. First, dualism. Within the apocalyptic worldview, the world is dualistic. And what that means is that it has two parts: this world that we see and the cosmic world that we don't see. The cosmic world is composed of good cosmic powers and evil cosmic powers, and each power works through earthly participants. And the cosmic forces of evil are the enemies of a good God. For first century apocalyptic Jews, these evil cosmic forces were sin, death, demons, Beelzebub, or the Satan. And according to this view, the historical earthly participants with these cosmic powers were earthly powers like Babylon or the Persians or Greece, and more contemporarily with the early Jesus story with Rome. And all of these historical earthly powers were oppressors of the weak. And within this worldview, the cosmic evil forces are presently in control of the earth. You can find a hint of this in 1 John 5:19. But accordingly, those who choose the side of good, because the evil forces are in control, those who choose the side of good will suffer, and those who choose the side of evil will prosper. The second tenet of apocalypticism was a pessimism. Those who subscribe to this worldview believed in the eventual overthrow of these evil forces, but they also believed there was nothing that they could do in the meantime. In other words, things would eventually change, but for right now, things are the way they are. There were variations on this belief, though in the time of Jesus, the Pharisees believed they could hasten the eventual overthrow through obedience to the purity laws of the Torah. Their pessimism produced the view that there were two ages: the present age, where the forces of evil are in control, and the age to come when these powers would be defeated. Earth would be liberated, and those on the side of good would be vindicated. And for now, according to this belief, all we should expect is that the world is going to get worse and worse until the very end, when the suffering of the good would be traded for vindication. The third tenet is this vindication, or this day of judgment. The apocalyptic worldview also included the belief that the age to come will arrive with a cataclysmic breakthrough that would usher in utopia. And that breakthrough was understood to be the inauguration of God's kingdom as spoken of by the prophets here on earth. It would be accompanied by by the bodily resurrection of those who had died previously, and then everyone of those that were living and those resurrected would face a punishment or a reward. You can see this in Daniel 12, verse 2. And the last tenet is the imminence of the end. Those who held to an apocalyptic worldview believed that the age to come and all of the events associated with it, it was just around the corner. So there are positives and negatives to this worldview. This worldview had positives, and these were that it took evil seriously. There are evils that are bigger than any of us individually, and this view tried to explain those bigger evils, and it provided hope that there was a cosmic force for good that would eventually put things in the earth to right. The negative was that it tended to produce a more kind of a moral complacency in the face of injustice, in the face of violence and oppression in the present, in the here and in the now. In other words, that there really is nothing we can do, is how they felt, to change human suffering around us until the age to come. So the best we can do is try and survive. And I want to take a look now. Now that we've got this worldview in our mind, let's look at the canonical Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And if you read them with this worldview in mind, a lot of things begin to make sense. Today, our culture mostly subscribes to a more naturalistic worldview, which means that many people see this world as the result of observable, measurable forces that have repeatable impacts on things and people in the world. And this view is not dualistic. It assumes that everything that happens on this planet can be explained by natural causes and effects on this planet. And the earthly canonical gospel authors, they were not naturalists. They drew from the world view of their own time, and that was, again, the apocalyptic worldview. And this is important. It helps us understand and it explains much of what we read in the gospel stories which they wrote. They believed that in Jesus' life and teachings, which climaxed in his execution and his resurrection, they believed that the apocalyptic event that they had been looking for in the future had finally arrived. It had happened. And I don't believe that someone has to hold the apocalyptic worldview to find benefit in the Jesus story today. I think someone can hold a naturalistic worldview and still gain much from the ethical teachings of the Jesus of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that will help all of us create a safer, more compassionate world for us all. But most Christians today subscribe purely to neither an apocalyptic, it's not a pure apocalypticism nor a pure naturalistic worldview. Most Christians subscribe to a hybrid of both, kind of a combination, which is influenced mostly by the narratives of whatever religious tradition they belong to. On the spectrum of apocalypticism on one end and the natural worldview or naturalism on the other, the more fundamentalist that a Christian is, the more they'll hover near the apocalyptic end of the spectrum. The more progressive a Christian is, the more they will hover near the naturalist end. And both will likely draw at least some elements from the other worldview as well. So it's not a clean cut and dry. But I'll be contrasting the naturalistic worldview with the apocalyptic worldview in next week's podcast. But what I would like to contrast this week is the apocalypticism of the early church with the apocalypticism of many fundamentalist Christians today, because there is a stark difference between the two. The Christian apocalyptic worldview of today typically holds to some level of dualism, just like first century apocalypticism. And they look at cosmic forces of good and evil that are working through earthly powers and systems, and it too looks toward a future judgment and vindication that is referred to by many who hold this view as the end of the world. And this view also holds that this end is imminent. It's just around the corner, and we don't have much time left. And lastly, this view also tends toward a pessimistic passivity. Things are just going to get worse and worse. There's nothing we can do until the end to change anything. We might as well just survive until Jesus comes the second time to set things right. And things will not get any better until the end of the world arrives. And this contemporary form of apocalyptic worldview, because of this element right here at the end, this pessimistic passivity, it's a subtle denial of Jesus. The authors of the Jesus story did subscribe to an apocalyptic worldview as well, but theirs was radically different. The difference between their apocalypticism and contemporary apocalypticism is that they believed that in Jesus, the apocalyptic event that they had been looking for in the future had finally arrived. It had happened, and they were no longer focused on some future event. The authors of the Jesus story in the New Testament were looking at the present through the lens of the life, the teachings, the execution, and the resurrection of their Jesus. And Christians who hold a contemporary apocalyptic worldview today, they're still looking toward the future, some future event for world change. And many of those are remaining passive until those events take place. I wish I had a nickel for how many times I've heard people say, you're wasting your time. You're just arranging deck chairs on the Titanic. You're wasting your time trying to alleviate human suffering in the present. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse until the end of the world. And the writers of the Jesus story believe that in Jesus, the future apocalyptic event in the form of a mustard seed, I'll grant you that, and it needed to grow and to enlarge, but they believed that it had already arrived and they were actively working. They weren't passive. They were actively working to participate in Jesus's liberation from suffering here and now. They were no longer waiting on the future. The kingdom had come. They were no longer entrenched in passive pessimism. They were active, participating in Jesus's work of liberation now. And you can read through the book of Acts and see that. But holding to an apocalyptic worldview, the gospel writers believed Jesus was their long-awaited Messiah who had ushered in, he had actually ushered in the age to come. The old age was still present, but the age to come had been planted in the old age like that mustard seed, like it had come in the form of leaven placed in dough. And Jesus was their liberator from all things that oppressed them, both cosmic evils and those forces of earthly collaboration, specifically Rome. And these writers saw Jesus as their liberator from all the things that oppressed them then in their lifetime. And Mark's stories of Jesus performing a demoniac liberation, I think, are classic examples of earthly acts of liberation from cosmic forces of evil. And I know for those modern readers who subscribe to a more naturalistic worldview, the demon stories of Mark are intellectually and philosophically troubling, to say the least. You can find these in Mark 1:32 and verse 34 and verse 38, Mark 3:15 and 22, Mark 5:18, Mark 6:13, Mark 7:26, verse 29 through 30, and Mark 9, verse 38. But when we read these stories as part of an apocalyptic worldview, and their view of Jesus as the arrival of the fulfillment of that worldview, we see the importance of the demoniac stories to the early Jesus followers. Jesus had power over these cosmic forces. And also, the other things that they believed they needed liberated from, the stories of Jesus raising people from the dead. Death was a cosmic force they needed delivered from. Forgiving people of sins. Sin was a cosmic force they needed delivered from. And healing people who were sick. Jesus to them was not a post-mortem savior, nor someone who just told them to keep looking toward the future. The end of the world was still ahead. Jesus to them was a present liberator from all the things that concretely oppress them now. And these followers saw Jesus as the earth's liberator from the cosmic forces of evil. And as such, it was important that Jesus then in the stories demonstrated power over these cosmic demonic forces. And again, it's Mark 1:27-28. Go back and reread it now. The people were also amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to the impure spirits and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. So they, again, they saw Jesus as the apocalyptic liberation or the kingdom that had come. And whether, again, whether someone subscribes to a more naturalistic worldview or a more apocalyptic worldview, the Jesus story can still be relevant, regardless of how one explains human suffering, whether it be through natural causes or through cosmic evil forces. Jesus is the liberator from things that cause oppression, violence, and injustice now. The gospel is not so much about an afterlife or the end of the world as it is about freeing people from anything that oppresses them here and now today. When Jesus would encounter someone who was suffering, he wouldn't save them from a future calamity. He would go to work to deliver and liberate them from whatever it was that was oppressing them right then, right there. And to follow Jesus means to participate in Jesus' work of liberating people from the things that concretely oppress them in this world. And whether it be sexism, racism, colonialism, militarism, consumerism, authoritarianism, classism, capitalism, heterosexism, binarism, whatever it is, the focal point of the Jesus story is liberation from all the things that concretely oppress people. He started his public ministry in Luke with this itinerary: "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, the recovery of sight to the blind." Remember, that's prison blindness, as we've covered before. "And to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And that phrase, "year of the Lord's favor," that this passage is in Luke 4:18, by the way. But that phrase, "the year of the Lord's favor," meant liberation from their oppressors. And this is the liberation that Jesus referred to in his announcement of the coming near of the kingdom of God. The very material term kingdom is rooted in Jesus' Judaism. Remember, Jesus wasn't a Christian, he was a Jew. And unlike the kyriarchal kingdoms of that age, Jesus' kingdom would be based on sibling relationships and on friendships. So we were brothers and sisters towards each other, not lords of one another. And he said, "I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends." And we see this demonstrated as Jesus, whom the disciples called Lord, how he stooped to wash their feet. Those same disciples, he stooped and washed their feet. And a more contemporary term, I think, if we look at Matthew 23, verse 8, a more contemporary term for the basis of Jesus' kingdom might be kinship rather than kingdom. We have it's a new world that's formed on the base of being siblings to one another, being kin to one another. And in short, the gospel is the good news of liberation now, not an announcement of good news to come one day later. The gospel is not an end of time fire insurance policy over which Christians now have to argue over the amount of premium to be paid in the present. The gospel is the good news that the seeds of liberation from things that concretely oppress now are to be found in the teachings of the nonviolent Jewish revolutionary Jesus. Heart group application this week, as we gather together around Jesus' shared table each week in our heart groups, the teachings of Jesus call us to live out the values of this gospel in our community, first within our heart groups and then within the larger community outside our heart groups. And a couple of weeks ago, I asked you to list what those within your heart group needed to be liberated from and to practice ways that you could come alongside each group member in living out the values of the Jesus story. Well, number one, this week, I want you to take inventory of how you're doing with that. Number two, I want you to acknowledge areas where you need to make some adjustments. List areas that you could be doing more in. List the things that didn't work. And then the things that you choose to do, list those things that you chose 2 weeks ago, but you didn't end up doing. You didn't follow through with them. And then number three, adjust what you have been doing to better meet the needs of those in your heart group. And don't be afraid to adjust again anytime, whenever you feel that what you're used to doing or what you used to do is no longer working. So again, the teachings of Jesus contain the seeds of liberation now, not later. Like a mustard seed, they will grow if we will choose to water them. And wherever this finds you this week, keep coming to the shared table. Keep endeavoring to follow the teachings of Jesus together. Keep living in love until the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. Remember, it's many voices, one new world. I love each one of you dearly, and I'll see you next week when we take a look at the strengths and the weaknesses of the naturalistic worldview for a Jesus follower today. Again, thanks for listening. I love each one of you. I'll see you next week. Thank you once again for listening to this podcast. As I said earlier, Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free. We don't make any money off of our seminars that we do in various local venues, and all of our resources are provided for free online. I have a hard time philosophically charging people money for that which I think Jesus gave to humanity for free. And so we take Jesus' words very seriously. Freely you've received, freely give. Even anything that we receive above our annual budget, we don't keep. We like to pass that on to other charities who are making a difference with the poor in this world. So if you'd like to support Renewed Heart Ministries and the work that we're doing in helping others encounter Jesus, please go to renewedheartministries.com. You can either, you can go to renewedheartministries.com/donate, or if you go to just the website, you can click in the upper right, the link there that says donate. You can make a one-time gift or become one of our monthly contributors. Every little bit helps. And for those of you who are already supporting us, with all of our hearts, we want to take this opportunity to say thank you. You're the one that's enabling us to share Jesus far and wide all around the globe. Thank you to each one of you for listening once again. As we like to say here at Renewed Heart Ministries, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. Thank each one of you so much.